Good morning, gentlemen. It's an honor to have the privilege to be able to talk to you a little bit this morning. I've got a story to tell you, and I'll tell you it starts off in 2008 when the economy was melting down and I had the opportunity to transition into the CEO role at IOA, and I felt completely inadequate. I felt over my head. I felt overwhelmed. I felt like it was just too big of a job for me, and God told me, was clear with me at the time, that he would be there with me, and I told him, God, if you show up, I'll show up. So this is one of those situations where I'm not the guy that loves to be on the main stage. I'm not the guy that necessarily loves to be. The mic only goes through the camera, Brian. It doesn't. I'm going to try to talk as loud as I can without yelling. Anyway, God promised me he'd show up. And I told him, God, if you will, I will. So when I'm asked to do these things, even though I'm the guy that doesn't dine to be on the stage, if I can use some of the experiences I've been through to make an impact for him, I'm going to walk through that door every time, so that's why I'm here. I'll tell you a little bit about me first so you get an understanding, a little bit about my background, and then it'll flow into the story that's been so impactful for me, and I pray it's impactful to some of you today in the room. I grew up in Pittsburgh, moved here when I was 9, but I had a little bit of a difficult childhood when I was there, very blue-collar upbringing, not quite as rough as my parents. My dad grew up in the projects of Pittsburgh, and my mom, we call her the highfalutin, the rich one. She grew up in the trailer park. So anyway, I grew up there. It was a little edgy, a little tough. I learned to fight, you know, pretty early in my life. And I realized, and I was thinking about this talk this morning, I have a 9-year-old son who's never been in a physical altercation in his life. And when I had moved to Florida at 9, I had been in plenty. So quite a different upbringing, thankfully, than my children have had. But, grew up with a little bit of a chip on my shoulder. I was an edgy kid, a little bit arrogant, had a lot of success in sports. I mean, I'm a short guy, but even at 12, I happened to be on the junior Olympic team for basketball, which I think was the last year I grew. So that was the end of my basketball career, but continued to excel in sports. I was an all-state football player at Lake Brantley. Ended up getting a scholarship to play football at a 1AA school, Liberty, in Virginia. And just had a lot of confidence in myself that bordered on arrogance and really trusted God and believed in God. But if I'm being honest, God was probably, if I'm being authentic, God was on a shelf. I felt like, yeah, he's there, break glass if needed, but you know what, I got this. It's all about me, and whatever happens, I can handle it. Me. You know, I used to read in the Word about this guy, Paul, talking about boasting in his weakness. And honestly, I used to think, what kind of girly man boasts in their weakness? You know, I had no understanding of what that meant. I thought, I boast in my strength. And I'm here to tell you what I've learned about what that means, and it's completely changed my life. All right, getting into the story, one of the things I do to try to stay young and stay competitive is I'll be 40 this year, and I play basketball every Saturday with a group of guys that are all in their 20s. And I hate to lose. I don't love to win, but I really hate to lose. So I'm out there every week, and I'm busting my butt to compete and trying to win. And last October 2015, I was playing one Saturday morning like I normally do, and I really threw my back out pretty bad. And it's normal for me on a Saturday morning to come home limping, aching like I normally do, but this time it was really significant. And I'm in the shower when I get home, and my back's hurting, my stomach was hurting, and I even had some pain in my groin. And as I went like this to feel in my groin where I felt some swelling, I noticed a lump on my testicle. And it freaked me out immediately. I knew I had to go to the doctor, and if you're like me and most men, I'm not going unless it's really bad. I can't stand the doctor, and I'm sorry if anyone is one here, but it's got to be a problem. So I knew in the shower I got to go. Didn't want to tell my wife, but immediately I was scared, and I knew it was a big deal. So I'm putting on the face for the next few days, and I'm good. My wife could tell, what's wrong with you? What's eating at you? Nothing. I'm good. You know, the typical stuff. So I finally broke down and told her, look, I found this lump. I'm scared. I'm going to go make an appointment, so I do. The guy can see me on a Friday, 2 weeks after I found the lump. So I go in there that morning to see the urologist, and he gives me a sonogram and says, yeah, you know, I don't know if it's cancer, but it's certainly a tumor, and it's got to come out. And I said, Doc, you mean surgery out? He said, yeah, Heath, surgery. So that was a Friday, and he told me, you need to leave here to go to Florida Hospital right now, sign up your pre-surgery paperwork, because Monday morning you're having surgery. So again, I'm a healthy young guy in good shape, completely blindsided, and literally 3 weeks prior, I just had a perfect physical. So drive to the hospital, tell my wife what I'm doing. She's concerned, as you can imagine. freaked out that whole weekend. Well, that Monday morning comes, and I said, you know what, I'm talking to myself, talking me up. You know, it's no big deal. A little bit of surgery is not going to hurt anything. You're strong. You're good. So I go in there with a little bit of confidence, still a little scared, but surgery does go well. The doctor, I remember as I came out of it, he leans over my bed when I'm done with the surgery, and he says to me, Heath, the surgery went well. Your blood work came back normal, so there was no tumor markers in your blood, so it probably wasn't cancer. And so I was, you know, feeling really good about that. I go home. He said, you know, the testicle that was taken out, and again, I'm feeling like, hey, you know, I still got one left. I can still be myself. I'm okay. But I'm waiting on the results. But he gave me basically some false hope. And so I'm sitting home for a few days waiting for the results to come back. And a little bit worried, but pretty confident. He gave me a lot of good news. And I finally get the call. Instead of 2 days later, it was three, because they had to run additional tests, which didn't feel real good to me. Well, finally, on that third day when the doctor calls, he said, yeah, Heath, I'm sorry, it is cancer. And he said, it's an aggressive form. It's a non-seminoma. He goes, but again, you know, your blood results came back good, so the chances of it spreading are pretty small, so don't worry about it. Feel good about it. But the next step is you got to go through a bunch of CT scans, your brain, your chest, everything, your whole body, to make sure nothing has spread. So I said, okay, you know, we'll do that. So I go and I get the scan set up, and I go take the scans, and he tells me, again, there's a good chance there's no issue there. So I'm a little feeling pretty good about it, but a little, it's in the back of my mind. Well, I go in to get the actual results, and he gives me false hope again. He says, hey, you know, your scans look great. You know, there is this little spot on your lung, but I wouldn't worry about it. He said, you know, your cancer spreads through your lymph nodes. It wouldn't go from your testicle right to your lung, so you may want to have a specialist look at it, but you know, it's nothing to really worry about. You're good. It looks like we got it all in the surgery. Go home and feel good about it. Well, I didn't feel so good about it, so I decided to call a specialist, and Dr. Einhorn in Indiana, who specializes just in testicular cancer. So I call him for an appointment, and he couldn't see me for a few weeks, and he said, well, I'll tell you what, go give some blood work before you come see me, because we'll check your tumor markers again to see if the cancer is in your blood. So I go and do that, and I'll tell you a quick side story, and I show up early to the lab core down the street from my office. I'm early like I always am for most things, and I walk in the door and it's empty. It's an empty room, and the guy behind the desk, who being authentic, he was a jerk. I walked in and he said, how you doing? Sign in. Okay, you know, so I did that, and before I could sit down, he goes, all right, you're up. You know, it wasn't Heath, you know, I'd like to come back. You know, it was just kind of rude. I'm not sensitive, but whatever. I'm just kind of thinking in my head, glad this guy's not the nurse taking my blood. He's kind of a jerk. But so he proceeds to follow me in the room, shut the door, and put the gloves on. So, and I'm thinking, oh, great. The guy works the front desk. He's a jerk. Now he's drawing my blood. And so I'm sitting there, and instead of praying, like, oh, God, these hope these results are good, I'm thinking, oh, beep. So, you know, then I went to praying, like, oh, God, please, I hope this works out. This guy's unprofessional. And the reality is he did a good job. Drew the blood, came out fine. It was no problem. And I looked at him at that time. I said, hey, man, thanks. That was less painful than I expected. And I said, now I'm just praying that the results of this blood test is good. And this guy's whole countenance changed in the moment. And he looked at me, and he kind of winked, and he said, you're going to be just fine, my brother. And I kind of looked at him weird, and I said, well, thank you. And I went to look at his name on the name tag, and the name tag said Messiah. And I just felt like in that moment, that was a little word from my Father in heaven, and I had a little bit of peace about that. And then I felt like a schmuck for judging this guy. But so anyway, I walk out of there, and I'm feeling really good about, I'm going to get good results. God is all over this thing, and I'm going to go to Indiana and get my results for this, and I'm going to be fine. So I fly up to Indiana feeling pretty confident about things, and the specialist says to me, he goes, yeah, I'm pretty concerned about that spot on your lung. I said, whoa, the local guy said. Yeah, the local guy said, but the way your cancer travels, it can travel in microscopic pieces, and many times it skips the lymph nodes. So I'll tell you what, let's give you 6 weeks, we'll give you another scan, and if that spot on your lung grows, and testicular cancer grows fast, we'll know, and then we're going to have a different conversation. So I've got 6 weeks to wait, and I'm home, and I'm having those thoughts in my head, as you can imagine, and right in the middle of this time was when the Paris terrorism attacks happened. And I remember being home, and I'm distracted, and I'm not present with my kids or my wife, and I'm just feeling under it a little bit, and I just felt like I needed to escape from the news and the terrorism attacks and all this stuff that was on TV. And I swear every single stinking commercial I saw was Cancer Center Treatments of America or MD Anderson. I couldn't get away from it. And I just remember this night telling my wife, I said, you know, I need to get away. I'm going to go upstairs. And I don't watch a lot of TV, but I've got a DVR with some stuff recorded on it for, you know, rainy days or some time when I've got some free time. And I had 5 episodes of ESPN's 30 for 30 recorded on the DVR. And I clicked on one of them, and it said, The Gospel According to Mac, Coach Mac. And I thought, okay, that's good. Hey, no terrorism, Coach Mac, football, that's good. No cancer, gospel, that's good. You know, I was thinking this is a good thing for me to watch to be distracted. So I proceeded to start watching it, and I'm into it, and it's a really good story. And Coach Mack took over the University of Colorado Buffaloes, and he took them worst to first, and he recruited the number one high school quarterback in the country that year, and as a freshman, this kid lights it up. And so I'm interested in the story, and then sophomore year comes around, and they're set up for this kid to take them to the title, to the championship. And in the middle of that season, that young man got cancer. And I'm sitting on the foot, you know, the corner of the couch. And I'm going, God, come on, man, I can't escape this. Are you kidding me? You know, I'm starting to be angry, and I'm just, you know, starting to woe is me and why me? I'm healthy, I'm young, and I don't want to watch this. And I remember saying, this story better end well. And it didn't. The young man died that year. And so now I'm really feeling under it and left and like, God, where are you? You know, you told me you'd be with me. I trust you. Where are you? And now I can't get away from terrorism, and now I'm watching this. And really, really was hard on me, and I just felt alone. So I now go back to see Dr. Einhorn, and he tells me after 6 weeks, yeah, you had a 1 millimeter spot on your lung. It's now the size of a shirt button. It's grown. What's next for you? We can't do surgery on it. The spot on your lung is in a very bad place. You have to do chemotherapy. I'm a guy who, when I get sick, I don't take medicine. You know, I've had broken bones. I don't take pain pills. After surgery, I took no pain pills. So I'm just a guy, unless I'm really screwed up, I'm not taking anything. And I thought chemotherapy freaked me out, as you can imagine. Well, in between, prior to getting the chemo notice, we have an annual meeting every year at IOA in December where I get up and I speak to our staff, and it's normally business related, but I decided, you know, I'm going to be authentic. I'm going to talk about what I'm dealing with. I didn't want to send a generic email. So I got up and I talked about my nut cancer, which is the last thing in the world I wanted to get up and do, but I felt like it would be good to have some authentic discussion about it. So I did that, and I started to see some good come out of it because 3 people in that room noticed lumps on their testicle. So again, I started to feel a little better about that this could be used for good. Then the week later, I got the news that chemo, you know, so I'm like, oh boy. And the way chemo works with testicular cancer, it's 9 or 12 weeks of treatment, depending on how severe it is. And the reason it's pretty curable is because only young males get it. I'll be 40 this year, and it's very rare for anyone over 40 to get it. It's usually a young man's disease. Well, they know they can pump you full of chemo and you won't die. So that's one of the reasons it's curable. So my treatment was treatment every week for 9 weeks, but 3 of those 9 weeks, it was 5 hours a day, 5 days a week. So it was an unbelievable grind for me. And I made the decision, I didn't want to be inpatient, I didn't want to go into the hospital to do it, I wanted to do outpatient because I wanted to work when I wasn't in the chemo chair, and I wanted to be there with my family and sleep in my bed and all that good stuff. So I decided to do that. Well, January 11th of this year was my first day in chemo. And I walked into Florida Hospital's Cancer Center, and you know, I'm telling myself, I'm driving there, I remember it on the way, and I'm telling myself, old ladies do chemo, man, toughen up, you'll be fine, this isn't that big of a deal, man up, you know, I'm kind of rah-rahing myself. But I show up, and I'm scared, you know, I look around, and there's 20 other people getting treatment in the room for God knows what cancers and blood transfusions and everything else, and I'm the youngest guy there, and no one else looks good. And I'm scared, and I sit down, and the way it works, I didn't get a port, I got IVs, so I sit down first, they put an IV in my arm, and then they take about 30 minutes to go mix your drugs in the back room before you start your 5-hour chemo drip. So she puts in my IV, and I'm sitting there by myself, and I'm just, all the things you can imagine are going through my head, all the fear that comes with this. And this wonderful old lady, Judy, older lady, she was 70, a little over 70, sits down next to me, and starts up a conversation. And she's, "Hi, sweetie, what's your name?" And I said, "Hey, I'm Heath, and I'm scared. Here's what I'm doing." And she proceeded to speak life into me. And Judy told me her story. She said, "Hey, I'm 70, and 6 years ago, I was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer, and I was given no hope. But Heath, I'm here to tell you that this is my last treatment. My scan on Tuesday was clear. You're going to be fine. God is with you." And she just put wind in my sails in a moment that I needed it more than any moment in my life. And I'll never forget her. So let me fast forward about 4 weeks. I'm in the middle of treatment, and my hair's falling out, and I'm nauseous. I feel like crap, and I'm just a wreck. I'm a shell of myself. And I show up one morning to get my treatment like I always did that week, and I was having problems with my veins. I had a couple veins literally explode. I was having significant issues to where they were having to poke me many, many times to get an active vein to work, and I'm just feeling left and under it and miserable. And I show up that morning, and I remember telling Angela, my nurse, "Angela, God's got to show up today. You can't poke me 8 times like yesterday. I don't have anything in me left. And I'm just trusting God. It's all I got. I got nothing left. I can't fix it. I can't will myself to be better. I can't. Money doesn't matter. Nothing fixes it. It's just me and God." And she proceeds to put the needle in, and it worked, and started my 5-hour drip. Well, the guy sitting next to me getting treatment, you know, I imagine it's what, like, I've never been in jail or prison, but I imagine it's like that. Like, "Hey, what are you in for?" And, you know, I proceed to tell him my story, and, you know, I'm feeling sorry for myself and telling him my veins stink and this is awful and blah, blah, blah. And Michael was his name, and I'll never forget this guy. He proceeded to tell me his story. And he said, "Yeah, Heath, he was about my age. He's 42. Like Judy, he had stage 4 colon cancer." And he said to me, "I went through my surgery, I started taking chemo, and the chemo's not working. It is keeping the cancer from growing, but it's not killing it." So the doctor, and he had a couple kids like I do. I said, "The doctor told me it's not killing it, but it's keeping it from growing, so you're basically going to be on chemotherapy as long as you're alive, however long that is." And all of a sudden in that moment, I knew God was going to use me. And I looked over at him and I said, "Hey man, let me tell you about Judy." I told him her story, and I proceeded to pray with that guy right there in the chemo chair. And I know I made a difference in that guy's life, but I don't think he has any clue of the impact he had on mine. Because for the first time, I really saw this disease and my prognosis, which was much better than his, as an opportunity. It wasn't as much of a challenge when I looked at his prognosis. And I decided from that moment, I was going to take this for a type A guy who had to be strapped to a chair all these hours, all these weeks, that I was going to use it to be a better husband, a better father, to get closer to my Father in heaven, and to use it for good. Because otherwise, what's the stinking point? And so I just had a shift that happened, you know, where before I was feeling, and I'm not a control freak, but I have everything in my life lined up pretty well. The business is good. I do what I want to do. I'm around who I want to be around. And everything's pretty much lined up. But for the first time in my life, I felt like I lost total control. I had no control over anything, and it was literally just me and God. So as that shift started to happen, I started to realize, because prior to this, you know, I'm type A, I'm busy like all of you, I have a lot of responsibilities, and my day is almost filtered through, I got to do this, I got to do that. You know, I start off, I drop my son off at 7:30 at school, get to work by 7:45, I got to do this, I got to do that. I got all these balls in the air. But when you're faced, folks, with the fact that you might not be able to do anything, it's not what you got to do anymore. It turns into what you get to do. And I started to shift and look at things through the lenses of, you know what? I get to take my son to school every morning. I get to work in a job where it's not always perfect, but I'm around people I love, and I'm making an impact in something greater than myself, that's bigger than myself. And I started to see things through a different set of lenses. And even in this time, I remember having a conversation with my son who was having a bad day in third grade. And I'm in the middle of chemo, and I'm a wreck, and I look like a crackhead. I'm a mess. And I'm sitting there at the foot of my son's bed, and we're praying together, and I'm reading books with him. And then he's complaining about third grade, you know, awful things for a 9-year-old. And God gave me some words for him, and it stuck true to me now, and I'll share it with you. As he was giving me all the reasons he didn't want to go to school, and in my head I'm thinking, man, I got to go to chemo tomorrow. But I said to him, I said, hey, buddy, you know, man, your dad's had a lot of success in his life, first in sports and then in business. But you know what, bud? I've almost learned nothing from my wins, other than maybe confidence. You know, I don't know that I learned a lot from my wins. But, buddy, I've learned everything from my losses, my failures, my challenges, from cancer. So let me tell you, son, the life is going to rain on you sometimes, and I pray it's not cancer. I pray it's never anything like I'm dealing with. But I want you to know, the challenges are what make you a man. The challenges are what are the opportunities for growth. You don't get that from wins. So, you know, so all that to say is this cancer experience has caused me to have a better relationship with my kids, to have conversations with my son that I wasn't having 60 days prior. I mean, I'm thankful for that. I wouldn't trade it now. You know, I just got my 6-month clean scans this past Monday, so it was a stressful week. This past week, going in there on Monday, I felt good about it. But when I had the CT scan the week before, my veins were acting up again, and it brought me back to the how I felt and all those issues that I had. And so I went there, and I got great news this week. And I just want to share with you really the main comment I want to make, or the main part of my message is, had I gotten my prayers answered when I felt like God was not around and not listening to me, but had those prayers in October been answered prior to chemo, I wouldn't be the man that I am. I wouldn't know what I know. I wouldn't have some of the wisdom that God's given me. I wouldn't have the relationship with my wife and my children that I have. I wouldn't be in the mindset that I'm in right now with a better perspective. So my encouragement to you is, whatever it is that you're dealing with, when you feel like God's not there, when he's not listening, and where are you? He is there. The answer may be different than you want, but it may turn out and will turn out for good, one way or another. He's in control of all things. And so it shifted my perspective. So now when I'm in the weeds and when I'm not feeling like he's around, I'm quick to remember that maybe this is going to be like cancer was, and it's going to turn out. Maybe you have a better answer than I do, even though I feel like you're distant and you're not there. So that's my encouragement to you. And another thing that I've learned to do, when the devil starts lying to you and bringing up this negativity, and you know, because the only ability he has in any of your lives, if you're a believer, is he has no authority in your life, but he can get you to believe lies. And we're all children of God, and we don't need to believe his lies, and he has no authority in our life. So now when I start going down that road of worry, I tell him where the heck he is, and that I'm a son of God, and he has no authority here, and he can go pound sand and screw himself. I'm sorry, I don't want to be on it. I don't want to be unprofessional. I even spoke at my church and said a few words I probably shouldn't have said, but that's how I talk to him, because he is under my feet. He has no authority, and you all need to take charge and know that about yourself. If you're a son of God, it doesn't matter how good or bad you are. You're a child. He has no authority, and I speak truth to him now when I go down those roads, and I pray that when you're in those situations, you do the same. You know, prior to this experience, guys, I wasn't mature enough, to be honest with you. When I watched other people have struggles around me, whether it was cancer or whatever else, I would say to them, hey, Brian, I'm sorry, man, I love you, I'll pray for you, and I would. But I never took what other people around me were dealing with, and I never felt like, how could that impact me? I never used it to change the way I thought. I always thought, cancer's for the other guy, you know, not me, I'm young, I'm strong, and that was a lie. So again, if you think you're in control of everything, you're believing a lie. And number two, there's just so much more to it to be mature enough to learn from others. And I'm at a place now where I can, and I hope you in this room are that same way, that you don't have to deal with something like I did to get humbled, to have some of the understanding and perspective I'm talking about. So now, you know, Paul, who I thought was a fool, boasting in his weakness, I now understand what that means. I boast in my weakness because his strength is in me. I'm strong because of him. He's in me. It isn't me. And Paul is one of my favorite people in the Bible now that I understand that. So, you know, one last thing I'll tell you. If you're like I was prior, I would have a bad thing. Like, for example, here's a good one. About 9 months ago, my grandmother died. And I was with her the day before she passed. And we spent some good time together. And when she died, I felt a peace about it. I knew she was going to heaven. I knew where she was. And I was okay about it. But after that, you know, you get a few days where you got the things that matter, matter. The things that don't, don't. You've got a good perspective, right? But it was always fleeting for me. You get back into the real world and life happens, and all of a sudden that peace and the perspective, it goes away in the normal grind of life. Well, this past experience is the first one in my life that I believe for the first time it won't be fleeting for me anymore. And I pray for you all when you have those moments of clarity that you stay there, that you remember what's important, because I promise you, almost everything that everyone in this room gets fired up about on a daily basis in the grand scheme of life doesn't really matter. I promise you it doesn't. When you're faced with not being here for your kids, when you're faced with things that really, really matter, the normal grind goes away. And I'm thankful, and I believe long term my perspective will be there, that I'll remember. And I just pray and I hope somebody in this room can get encouragement out of that. And remember, when you're in the fire, remember that he's there. Remember that he loves you, even if it doesn't look like he's there, even if it doesn't look like he's listening. He is there. He does love you, and God is faithful. You can trust him. He is a good father. So that's what I had to say this morning. It's an honor to speak to you guys. Again, I'm not the guy that dies for this. I don't live to be on stage, but if I can use this opportunity or use this difficulty as an opportunity to make an impact, I promise God I would do that years ago when he stepped up for me in the job that I'm in that was very scary for me at the time. And so I'm going to walk through that door, and I encourage you all, when God leads you or a door opens, even if you don't want to do it, go through it and it'll turn out well. God is good. I appreciate you all, and God bless.